Welcome back to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guests this week, Robert Michael and Jerry Brown. Please tell us about your new book, Robert and Jerry. What kind of book is it? It looks beautiful, and who do you hope is going to read it?
What I was trying to do out of the book was to tell the history of Coburg through its people and its buildings and some of its social history. I think we were talking about earlier about novels, but trying to put flesh and bones and character of the people. I specifically was interested in the name, the spirit of the place, because I want to give the book, I want people to know what the character or the personality or the essence of the town is, more than a straightforward history. And then also to tell the history of the buildings, and also to, through the introduction chapters, how the town developed as a result of its history and how the history affected the growth of the town.
Those are large ambitions.
Yes, and more than Jerry and Suzanne were really thinking about. But Jerry has...
What would you like to say, Jerry?
Well, I think we were just fascinated with the straight architecture first when we moved to town 3 years ago. And I mean, there were obvious things like Sidbrook and the town hall and so on. I'm a guy who grew up in Toronto, in a story and a half, nice house, da-da-da-da. My dad was a history teacher. But when I first moved out of Toronto, it was to Prescott, just south of Ottawa. But I ended up with an 1852 log house, which that sort of really started the whole project of, let's take an older building, let's do the tasteful, reasonable kind of things. And as you learn how to work with the spirit or the feel, if you will, of the house, and still manage to make it a convenient, comfortable place for, a couple and two kids to live and grow together. That's where we started that kind of interest. There are no log homes, in Coburg, but we loved the architecture that we saw, and quite frankly, we loved we've now called it the spirit of the place. I think we originally would have said the feel of the place. And so we got involved because this was something that we could do. We've published some walking tour type books, much smaller than this, in the community of Prescott, where we were living at the time. And when something came up to say, okay, there's a Canada 150 celebration coming up next year, as it was at the time when we made this choice, what can we do to make a contribution to this delightful new community that we've just moved into? And a book which focused on architecture was our first choice. With Gail's help and putting us together with Rob, it became architecture melded with social history. And I think the result of all that is that a better book than we would have done on our own. Perhaps I can be bold enough to say a better book than Rob might have done on his own as well. And so we have the spirit of the place, which we present to you for your enjoyment.
Good. Well, I'm sure that people are going to enjoy it. And as I said to you earlier, it's an interesting format. I like that format. It allows you to take in things in little bits.
Yes. And actually, I had a bit of a manuscript before, and what I discovered was, because I work and do things, that I couldn't do long chapters. So I was trying to think of a format where I could just write a little essay or a little précis of something. And so, because I'd write a chapter or half a chapter, and then I wouldn't get back to it for a month or two, and I would have to go back and do all the research again. So I just thought, I'll just write these little bits, and then it became what it was.
And then publishers put the little bits and glued them together.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are the sources of your information? Where do you go?
Everywhere. I started off by tracing, and I still do a lot of tracing of descendants of Coburg and of the American families. And so, years ago in the 70s, when I went to U of T, I'd go to the Robarts Library, and they had these conveyor belts of phone books. So I would just go through different cities looking for names that had been in Coburg, and I would write them. And now it takes me 20 minutes. It took me 5 years sometimes to track people down. Now it takes me 20 minutes on the internet. But
You can even get hold of those phone books on the internet, can't you?
Exactly. So I would go and visit, and I met a lot of amazing people through that, and they often invite me to stay with them. When I stayed in Louisville, Kentucky, with Mrs. Blakely, who was a Hickman, who owned our house, and the Tracys, and all sorts of people who don't even know me just asked me to stay with them for the weekend or so. So that's been good. But I also, you know, the Library of Congress, the National Archives, the traditional sources mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And I learned early just to get a copy stand and for my camera and take it along so I could. People don't like to necessarily have their photographs go out of their house, so
I did it
on site.
How did you start with the people or the houses?
I was organizing it by house, but it's equally important in terms of the family and the architecture. Because it's also grouped so that when you look at it, you'll see houses of a similar style grouped together, so you can begin to identify that style as well. Mm. I would say the architecture, the buildings defined the format,
yes,
and then it crosses.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about some of your recent discoveries.
Well, you know, it's actually almost, you'd think I'd be sick of it, but it sort of kick-started me again. A couple of things that just got into the book at the last minute was, I go through the newspapers. The Coburg newspapers have been amazing help. They used to publish the lists of who was staying at the hotel or who was living where. So I've made Excel charts and have thousands of names and where they came from, and then I trace them. And so there was one, the Oliver Cromwells. So I could never find anything much about them, but I got lucky one time, and Mr. Cromwell died, and his wife married a Mr. Stotsbury, who turned out to be one of the richest men in the United States, and built his new wife a 100-room mansion outside of Philadelphia. Her daughter, Louise, was a noted beauty in society, and she was her second husband was General MacArthur, who, of course, ran the American Armed Forces in the mm-hmm. end of the war and things. And her brother, Jim Cromwell, married Doris Duke, who was one of the biggest heiress in the United States. And another one, just quickly, Charles de Lima, was a name. He was from a very wealthy, very quiet, money Jewish family in New York, in Brooklyn, and he eschewed the family traditions and became an actor and a playwright. He was in silent films with Douglas Fairbanks, and he married a Cuban woman whose father, in the 1860s, was the head of the revolution of Cuba to overthrow mm-hmm. Spain, and so her father became the first president of Cuba. So
that's astonishing. Now tell me about their rustic little cottages in Coburg. Where did they have a
summer house. It's demolished now, but it was on Darcy Street. And they were a very flamboyant couple. They wore capes, and they had their two mothers got along so well. They shared an apartment in the Dakotas in New York City, where John Lennon lived and was killed. Theirs was more modest. They lived in Florence and Italy and Coburg, you know. So it's an interesting thing. Another tale, just to quickly. Two people related to the Tracys, the Carrs. Miss Carr was going from Venice to Florence on a train, and she was sitting with another American young woman, and she said they were talking about what they were doing, and the Miss Carr said, "Oh, I've just been to Coburg, and now we're going to, you know, Venice." And the woman said, "Oh, we're going to Coburg after we go to Venice." So, you know, it was kind of on the map of those people. So,
yes,
and some of them here built houses that had 35, 40 rooms, 30 servants, you know,
yes,
groundskeepers, some of the grounds.
Okay, how about reading us some?
Well, I'm going to tell you a little story, if that's okay, because I don't read very well. One of the most famous people in Coburg was Nellie Grant Sartress, who was General Ulysses S. Grant's daughter.
Yes.
She came up in the early 1900s and with her mother, Mrs. Grant, spent two summers in Coburg. Their daughter, Vivian Sartress, was married here in 1902, and just about every newspaper I've ever looked at in the world had that wedding an account in the paper. The Grants were so famous. Nellie Grant Sartress, I like to equate her as the Britney Spears of her day. She she was so famous. She came to the White House as a teenager, and everyone gathered around this young teenager as a sort of optimistic thing. And then she had a kind of soap opera life. She married an English aristocrat, Algernon Sartress, who was kind of a cad and had affairs and kept his wife, poor Nellie, in a country house away from most people, and their family was brilliant. His mother was Carolyn Kemble, who was from the English acting family. the Campbells.
Oh, the Patrick Campbells.
Yes, and Sarah Siddons and all those people. And so poor Nellie was out of her depth there, and she died. Eventually the husband died. He wouldn't let her return to the United States with her children because he thought she wouldn't come back, which she probably wouldn't have. So she was basically trapped in England until he died. And so they came to here and then and eventually to Coburg because of the heir. Her daughter Vivian married Fred Scovel, who was son of Edward Scovel, who was an opera singer, and Marcia Roosevelt. Edward was from a very prominent Detroit family, but his wife Marcia was one of the Roosevelts of New York City. And so he came to New York and was a tenor at the St. Thomas Church, a very fashionable Anglican church on Fifth Avenue, where his aunts, who were society people, also sang. He was paid $700 a year as the tenor, and he met there Marcia Roosevelt, who had an income of about $70,000 a year. And they married, and it caused a sensation, really. They had riots in the streets, people trying to get into that marriage. He went off to Italy, bought a villa in Florence, and his daughter married a Count Fabricati, and they all sort of became semi-professional opera singers. And
a lot of artists of one kind and another came, didn't they, to Coburg?
Yeah.
So all these, have any of these people's houses survived?
Some have. Unfortunately, not as many. Coburg went through a period of great demolition, so a lot of the larger houses were demolished.
Yeah.
But there are several that survive.
Yeah.
And they're in the book.
Good. Well, many thanks, Rob and Jerry, for coming in. Now tell listeners where they can buy this beautiful book.
Well, the bookstore in Coburg on
Covett Street. Let's Talk Books.
Let's Talk Books, indeed, is the most obvious place. Or you can simply contact us as the publishers. Look it up online.
I think they're available at the art gallery.
They are at the art gallery. They're also at the museum, but I think it's closed for the season as we speak. So the obvious place would be Let's Talk Books,
lighthousepress.ca.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we deliver.
And soon I'm going to developing a website to go with the book.
And
a blog to continue the history discussion.
Mm. Wonderful.
Coming soon.
And so, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our show. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.